The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. It's been a while, but Peter's joined me. All right, Pete.
Yes, hello, Justin.
I've noticed a little bit of you know, interest creeping up there, you know, in you, in stocks, in the markets. Why is that, Peter?
Okay, well, because I wanted to come back onto the Weekend Podcast and talk about them. No, I think I came to the conclusion that, I've got to take more active control of my portfolio and probably try and invest my way out of a couple of holes that I'm in with a couple of those stocks. So there's no point in just sitting idly by. I think I've got to probably be a bit more proactive.
Do you know what? Interest rates, look, coming down, it's nailed on for this year. Nailed on, So the markets are going to react. But I did say a while back, for a couple of times, that Q1, we had a Sander rally. If you look at the AIM All Share, we had a Sander rally. And then I said Q1 is going to be a bit tricky because they're going to be moving around, looking at data, central banks, when they're going to, people are expecting, some people are expecting the first quarter a reduction in interest rates. It's not going to be that simple, but it's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to happen this year. By the way, before we start, right, I just want to say, we had a WhatsApp chat, and I did say to you, I said, I wonder who will win the Russian elections. I might put a fiver on Putin's main opponent. And you said, go bigger than a fiver, he's looking good for the win. So I did some research on his opponent. Turns out, he's dead. So I looked at, I thought, well, let's go down the line, look for his next biggest opponent. Turns out, he's in prison. So I thought, let's look at the next one. So in the next one, he's dead. So in the next one, he was in prison. Turns out, most of his opponents, although he's got, really bad health and they keep dying, or they're criminals and being locked up. So obviously the best thing to go for is Putin, because of course he's a he's a very healthy man. We've seen him, bare topped on horseback, very healthy man for his age. And also, obviously not a criminal, because he's, always looks smart, wears a suit and tie, doesn't he? Shakes hands with people. So I think that I think he may win, actually, Pete, because he looks like the best of a bad bunch out there, to be honest.
Right. And what are the odds? What are the odds can you get on the Putin?
Well, I think
win?
It's good odds for Putin to win.
Is
but
it?
But if you look at his opponents, they're either criminals or dead. So there's no competition there. And let's be honest, it's a fully democratic election, and when you've got a healthy, honest man like Putin at the top there, how can you lose? How can you lose that?
That's absolutely surefire winner. So
So sometimes it's good to
farm on that.
Yeah, exactly. When it's a one horse race, or seems like, sometimes it's good to have a little side punt, especially in sports. Sometimes that can happen. Kind of, you have a big upset. In fact, talking about upsets, got England being lucky in their Six Nations. Wow. Hey, upset is Ireland. That was lucky. A good lucky run they've had this Six Nations, haven't they?
Is it? Yeah. Is it what? Why is that lucky?
Well, because they literally nicked the luck of the Irish, I think, and they managed to nick it off them. Did you see that happening, Pete? England doing well in the Six Nations. Did you see that happening?
Well, no. And when we lost to Scotland, I did think, I can't see us getting any points from Ireland or France, so it's not looking good. But, it's turned out quite well, unlike Wales.
Yeah, so let's talk about stocks and shares. So let's wrap that up. I know, it's been bloody awful. The standard excuse is they're young side. They can grow into it, all that stuff. So,
But the funny thing is Italy have actually, found a bit of form and, very close to France, weren't they?
It's the final nail in the coffin tomorrow, really, for Wales. Literally, come on, guys. I think it's going to be hard. Yeah, Italy, finally, they put up a fight, and it seems like they could turn over Wales. There we are, bottom of the table. There we are. But, if you're at the bottom of the table, it's like bringing it back to markets, Pete. Sometimes, you can only go up. From there, you can only improve. I do think that actually with the markets at the moment, we have, oddly, and interesting, the markets always sort of know. I don't know how they know this, but if you go back to November or September 2021, that was the peak of the market. No one back then was talking about inflation going bananas and all that stuff. It started, bond yields started to rise, bonds started dropping in price, yields started rising. the market sort of knew it and they started selling off. You had a series of lower highs in the indices. It was becoming very hard work to make any money. You know, it started to get really hard then. Back end of 21 and start of 22, pretty much all of 22 was hard work. And then now, we literally, last month, had confirmation of a recession. What's the market's been pricing that in for 2 years? How does the market know that? So, you know, until now, the market's hit a low in November last year, no, October last year, hit a low, and it's bounced off now. We're up like 15% from the bottom, and yet we're seeing GDP data coming out now, the last couple of weeks, or this week, saying it was a technical recession. We're probably out of it now. So the market's already priced, the market saw this 2 years in advance. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But I think,
well,
you know.
Yes, I suppose it did see a downturn, and then it, well, I suspect that it would come true, and yes, it has. But my thing from my own personal portfolio point of view, though, is, and I know you say that the stocks are going to, you know, will rally, and I'm, you know, obviously living, hoping that is true. But, you know, you look at your portfolio and you kind of go, will they all rally? I don't know. And one or two are good companies, so I think they've just had a hard time, and hopefully they will recover and they will see, you know, a good spike in their share price. One or two others, you do wonder, and you think, is my capital better allocated elsewhere? And that's the question. And that's what I'm going through now in terms of, you know, should I be looking at other potential stocks that will return that, well, yeah, recover my loss, rather than just hanging on to the ones I've got. And equally, are a couple worth averaging down in so that I bring my average cost down, so that obviously I'm in the black sooner rather than later.
But yeah, well, do you know what, Pete? I've got the perfect thing for you.
Have you?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
A pot of gold?
No, you just want a pot of gold. You don't work for it. You've got to earn it, you know, so it gives you more achievement level. So for like probably 8-9 months now, the Sharepickers Investment Club has been shut because I've been upgrading because I quite like the markets, and I spend a lot of time.
Yes.
In fact, that's all I do. I realise it's all I do, pretty much. And I've had a good. I only lost money in 2022. So I made money every year, pretty much, from 2009. And I did really well, you know, from the bear markets, the great financial crash, up until 2021. In fact, 2021 I made money. The back end was bad. First, the front end of the bear was very good, but 2022 is where I lost money. 2023, I made money. This year, I'm about 16% up, and it's you only learn the bear market, really. I mean, you can, because I was learning, of course. I'm still learning. You're always learning. But I knew a lot more now than I knew back when I did, when I made, you know, quite a decent chunk of change. And what I've been looking at now is what really actually moves share prices, you know. And so you will get a general rise in all stocks in a bear market, because it's just about liquidity. Essentially, when you see interest rates coming down, people will start, you know, what's the point getting like 2% of my money when stocks are running 20%? Now, that's been the other way around for the last 2 years. It's like, I'd prefer to have 5% of my money rather than see a stock crash by 30, 40, 100% maybe on AIM, could be. So that'll change about liquidity.
Now, my question there, though, is then, where does that money go? You know, and so the people go, no, I'm not going to put it in a savings account anymore. I'm going to put it in the markets. Which are the companies that are going to benefit from those people investing in the markets?
Well, the thing with a bear market, you take a double whack, right? Double hit, because what happens is you tend to get private investors invest in the rearview mirror. You know, they look at how bad it's been, and they start selling. They don't look ahead and see we're at a low. Historically, if you were sitting on the sidelines and you had a chance to start investing now, you'd probably take that chance, you know, because this is once in a decade opportunity, and it's not going to happen overnight, of course, but if you're looking at the 3 to 5 year horizons, 10 year horizons, you know, investing now is a good time, you know, especially in good small businesses listed in the UK, because what happens is you'd be surprised how long it will take the average private investor. I mean, I'm not talking about active investors, but, you know, the people who check their portfolio maybe once a day, maybe, or maybe once a week, but they're mostly in funds, and they're in funds, and they will sell out the funds. And what happens is, if you have, you know, lots of private investors selling out funds, the fund manager then has to sell stocks to redeem that money to the investor, you know? So the share prices are going down anyway. And then fund managers have to sell because private investors are selling their funds. And so you've got a double hit then. So you almost, it's sucking, you know, liquidity out of the market. And that's what's happened for a while. So these people have seen their funds going down by a little bit. And they say, well, hang on a sec. I lost like 10% last year in my fund. I can get 5% in a savings account. What's the point? I'll put in a savings account. It's safer. So that's what happens. Now, when it'll take a while before you get the big rally. And in most active investors will, you know, benefited greatly before even that happens. But then that's when, looking in the rearview mirror, after the 20% rise in the indices, investors will start jumping back in. And it's almost a second wave of liquidity come back in, and fund managers then have more cash to allocate, you know, buying up. So that's how it is. You know, it's like, you know, selling gets selling, buying gets better. So it'll be like that. But one thing is, Pete, right? I've done well on stocks because I've been analysing for a long time what makes shares rise. And it's quite simple, really, but there's lots of... Nothing's ever black and white, is it, really? But if you look at it, if you are investing in small cap, you know, micro cap stocks that are revenue generating, the most important metric of all is... What do you reckon, Peter?
What's the most important metric to do with the
small
business?
Small companies.
Well, cash, isn't it, really?
It's lost me. But if you want them, you are investing for capital upside, the share price to rise, you know, what will make that happen? Because essentially you're investing in small companies because you want them to grow. So what is the most important metric?
Growth.
Growth. That's it.
What? Yes.
That's it. That is it. It's like, I've looked at, in fact, I'll give you an example, right? And this is what I'm focusing on, this is what I'm spending all my time on the ShareBigs Investment Club. So let me just pull this up. I'll show you some stats here. And I realise there's no way I can create a system that can capture everything. You know, and I thought, hang on, I don't need to, actually. Let me just get this up. Where is it? Where are we? Oh, yeah. So I realised, and I've looked back at this on every year pretty much, I look at the best performers and I look at them over not only the last year, but I look at the best performers the last 3 to 5 years as well, right? And 60% of the best performers, I don't know if you've heard this before, literally started their life sub 100 million market cap. So, so the thing I say, okay, the 40% are bigger than that, so you get some big winners, yes. But if you don't limit your research, say there's 1,000 companies listed on the stock market, you can't, if you research one a day, it would take you 3 years to research one. Now, by the time you get to the end of the list, the ones that start the list have released 3 sets of interim results or full year results. So your research is out of date. So you have to narrow your focus to where you think the big fish are swimming in the small pond. So that's literally sub 100 million. Start there, right? Then secondly, I looked at all these companies and I looked at 10 companies that 10 bagged over the last 10 years. They're all sub 100 million. They all had top line growth. And that translated later into obviously net profit growth, earnings growth. But it started off with top line growth. That means their product is selling. That validates it. That means, you know, what they're selling is being demanded increasingly so every year, pretty much. And I look for a 20% cut off. But so I've been compiling this thing. In fact, give you some examples too. I'm going to give you 10 baggers, Pete, right? That have started off sub 100 million market cap. And of course, the bigger a company gets, the harder it is to double. In fact, you could say if a company doubles, it's twice as hard for it to double because it gets bigger and the value has to generate, even perceived value, is bigger, it's twice as big. But look at this, 10 companies, right? So GB Group, right? 21 pence in 2009, 2021, 929, 1900% rise, started off 18 million market cap. ASOS, 70 pence a share in December 2005. Yeah, it's come down a lot recently, but it was up there for a long time. Market cap, it started off with 70 million. Share price increased by over 10,000%. Now, you only need sort of one or two of these in your portfolio and hold on to them, but you've got to spot them. And that's the thing, they all like growth. Next one, U Group. And I missed this one. I was interviewing Bobby Clare, the CEO, on the podcast. And I like the growth he was getting, but I thought the margins a bit thin. Now, margins are important, but not as important as growth. Growth is the main thing, and also value. But look at this. Went from 50 pence in April 2020, I was interviewing them, to £12.90. In February 2024, 2,500% increase. It started off market cap 8.4 million. Tristel, which is a cleaning
company.
U Group is energy, basically. They do energy, and disrupting, yeah. They're trying to disrupt the big boys. Tristel are like a cleaning company. They did very well in the COVID, but they went from 46 pence in 2014 to £6.60 in February 2021. 1,300% rise. Started off 18 million market cap. Future PLC. There we are. They've done Future, they've got very good value. World growth come back, because that's what powered the rise initially. But 2021, price went from 46 pence to £4.53. That's an increase of 2,000%, pretty much. They started 80 million market caps, 8-0. Carillion Group, 1,100%. From 2019-24, 1,100% started 40 million market cap. I want to say React Group. In fact, that's still a smallie. I like that. It did like 2,021%. It's another cleaning company. COVID really rose in that. It started off at 685K market cap. That's what it started off. It's still now. I think it's about 14 million market cap, that one. Gaming Realms, again. I've only done 10 of these because it's dragging on. 750% rise, but that was 1,000% rise during COVID because of gaming. It started off at 12 million market cap. Four Imprint, one of the best performers around. It just keeps going up. The share price on this is called Four as a ticker. But if you look at the share price, it's just literally bottom left, top right, nice chart. And it's gone from 225 a share. Where was this? In 2024, it's 44.80. That's 1,900%. 60 million market cap. What was it? And it goes on. I'm telling those. Argo Blockchain is the last one, by the way.
With the starting price you're giving, is that when they IPO'd, or is that?
No. That's basically, I've just gone back sort of, either 5 or 10 years, and I've gone from when they started to break out, basically, from range or something.
The breakout.
Some of them IPO'd. Some of them IPO'd then. It depends. But I've done a minimum of 5 years because I want to look at sustained rises. I don't want pop and drop resource stocks, digging dirt in Africa and just issuing shares. Basically, the only thing that produces shares. No gold, no copper, none of that stuff.
When they do break out like that, is that and you talk about the growth of the revenue growth, the sales growth.
Yes,
like is that correlating there? Is that that's what you're seeing?
Yeah, so normally it's lagged. So what you do is you keep an eye on companies that are doing that, and you stick with them because, if the growth stops, then obviously the share price will drop off a cliff. But then if you have a stop loss or if you start off small, it doesn't matter too much.
Yeah.
So you're better off having, starting off small and sourcing quite a few of these kind of companies. And then when one starts to really move, then averaging up, that's the winner. I'm going with that. It's like basically, and I keep saying this is why I've changed a lot. Only average down, Pete. If it the share price is an uptrend, that's it. Because it's almost like saying average down in a bear market. Don't do it, because what you're doing is you're in a downtrend. It's not buying a dip. But for example, Truefin is now starting to go in an uptrend, and I honestly really believe in this company. I said Stargo is amazing, Oxygen is amazing, and if you look at the blog I just wrote for the membership club, I said if you look at a year and a half ago I think it was, an offer was rejected on Oxygen for 26 million. That's half the value of Truefin. Now, Oxygen now is like doing 50% more EBITDA than it was back then. So it's probably worth more than that. Satargo alone, by the way, is going to be valued next year if they carry on with at 100 million. So you can say that's 130 million. Now, Truefin, we're not even including PlayStack. They've just had a record-breaking game come out that went EBITDA positive in an hour, and yet they're only valued at 50 million.
Yeah. But that's one of the stocks in my portfolio that I'm holding on to, and I'm sort of assessing when is it a good time to average down, because what will be the trigger for that share price to really start to push on up to a fairer valuation, because it does seem to be undervalued.
Well, I think the results come out soon. I think a good sign will be they're obviously going to be making a loss, but they've got enough cash now to get the profitability. But I think you may see some liquidity or someone taking profit during the finals, because they'll come out with a loss and people, it's a loss, and sell. But then, again, looking in the rearview mirror, that's the results from 6 months ago. It's not like, and if you look at what Satargo's doing, it's double subscriptions. That is the beast amongst the. I honestly think it's got a nice little combination because, Satargo is a truly rock star software as a service business. It could be bought out for, I think. in a couple of years' time, several hundred millions. I mean, you don't get people like Lloyds and Sage using it if it's not the best in class. You know, and also they'll probably announce more deals with other banks and all that stuff. But I mean, that's it. So that's now going in an uptrend. So make sure you buy a dip in an uptrend. Just buy it, don't just average down for the sake of average down, because it keep going down and down. So, you know, you're leveraging towards losers then. But anyway, what I've been doing, what I'm saying is, so I've been looking at all the metrics, right? And I'm looking at and growth for small cap stocks. Of course, if you want to grow in business, you need to have growth. If it doesn't have growth, it's not a growing business. The reason why we invest in small businesses is because they're going to grow, hopefully, and get bigger and bigger. And they can only do that by increasing their revenue and profit. So that's the most important thing. And so what I've been creating is something called stock scores. And I've been developing this now for, about 4 months with a developer. It's hard work because, I mean, there's so many metrics involved. Because I used to do this in spreadsheets. And if anyone's seen my videos online, you may have seen the spreadsheets I've been developing. This is now dynamic. It's going to be on my website very soon. We've nearly finished it. And literally every night I have to go through and check about 50 amendments every night for the last 3 or 4 months. But it's getting there, and I've got now about 85 companies in this list, and they're listed and ranked. Okay, so what I do is I list, these are the metrics I list them under. So under each metric, there's about three to five different metrics. So growth, value, health, efficiency, momentum, and potential. Each one of those gets a score, and then it's ranked. But for example, I'm looking at the company at the top of the list right now. I do hold it, and it's doing very well. And because if you look at it, these companies that score highly on all these metrics, I've got everything. So not only got growth, but they're also good value. They're not expensive. So you even combine those two. That's a rare commodity where you can buy a company that's growing, but it's not valued highly. Because normally, you know, companies that are growing very quickly are all really share prices shot up, and it's a little bit overvalued because people are pricing in future growth. But if you can put this through together, growth and value on its own, you've got something. Then all you need is momentum, and that's the most. So I say growth, value, momentum are the most important. Growth first, value, then momentum. But if you see a company on this list, for example, and it's all color-coded, it's got growth and value but not momentum, then just wait or take a little position and wait for the momentum to kick in. So so 80 stocks on this, I'm going to get up to 100. I won't get more than 100. I'll just knock others off the list so they don't score, you know, in the top 100. I won't display them. So these will be essentially the top 100 best stocks to invest in. And you probably ignore the 90, unless you know more about them. For example, I've invested in a company that's at, it's at 78, because I believe this contract's going to land that will max out their growth, and their value then will become good because they've got more revenue coming in, and obviously momentum will kick in. But as yet, they score okay in growth. Value's not too good, but momentum's not. But anyway, once you get access, because you've got access to this, Pete, when you have it, just have a look at it, and you can click on each company, go through all the metrics, look at everything, from growth, value, all that. So it's take me ages, but it's like, it's lovely to create something, and you realise, you know, it's coming to fruition. Finally, I didn't think I'd ever get there, because when you first submit it to the developer, they come back, and if it doesn't look how you think, there's loads of mistakes in there. You have to keep going through. Yeah. So everyone now, I'm still filling in my spreadsheets for companies, and then filling in the website, then checking it against my spreadsheets, and so they are now matching up metric for metric. And in fact, the last thing I had was when I said to the developer, no, that's wrong, that metric. It was something like, I think it was like EV EBITDA on value. I said, no, that's wrong there. It's gone green. It shouldn't be green. It should be scored this amount of points. And he said, well, this is what you sent me. And I realized, I had a mistake on my spreadsheet. They were right. I thought, oh, no, you're right. That's perfect. So, I want to say is...
How do we get access in the club?
It's only available to me as yet, because I'm still testing it. And so far, I'm only showing full year results, which is the most important. But coming soon as well will be interim results scored, so you can compare them. So if you've got, you know, if you're looking through, for example, a company, and last year's results were good, and then they release interim results halfway through the year, you can then compare the growth stats, you know, for the half year to the last year's full year. Are they still on par to still grow this year or do well this year? So you go, uh-oh. And, of course, it's not an exact science, because they may have seasonality where the second half may be stronger than the first half or whatever. But it gives you a nice little comparison. So, yeah, it's coming in there. It's slowly, you know, getting there. It's just taking, you know, long. It always takes longer than you think, doesn't it? You know, doing stuff like that, developing stuff. It takes a long time. But
That does sound interesting, yes. Yeah. And that's kind of the thing I'm looking for in terms of finding new opportunities.
Well, literally, you can look at the top 10, and you can't go right, because they have everything from growth. I mean, some of them, you know, and not fully up on growth. They're good growth, but their value is good. Their health is good. They're efficient because they're looking at margins, all that stuff. They've got momentum on the chart. That's good. And the potential, yeah. which is taken from, I take the potential either from broker notes, which is target prices, yeah. or if a broker target isn't there, I've also got a section there. You can see the forecasts. And what I do is 5 year, 3 year forecasts of these companies on certain metrics that you see. Oh, okay. So sometimes, for example, so what I have is the potential there. And you can check out the broker target, and then you look at my forecasts, and you can see how far apart are they? Because if they align, it's probably quite accurate. Now, if I'm saying I'm valuing this company target at £1, the broker's got £3, I don't understand. I don't understand that. So it's like, but you know, so it's bits of that as well. So So literally, yeah. it takes a lot of the. It's not research free. You know, you have to research a little bit afterwards. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, it takes a lot of the right. hard work out of it because the metrics are all there straight away. You know, I love it.
Did you say you can't go right?
Oh, you can't go wrong. What I'm saying is. I'm not saying yeah. it's a be all and end all, but I'm.
No, right. Okay.
What I'll be doing is collecting the data on like top 10 companies and see how they perform in the next couple of years and see if it works. And if it does, then they said, well, this is just an amazing system because, you know, these companies that got everything, they perform very well. And why shouldn't they? If they've got growth and value and health and efficiency, momentum, potential, then they should perform well because they've got every metric, you know? So,
The only thing is, like, on some. Like companies on their pre-revenue.
Hang on, what are you talking? Are you talking in the back of the phone there? Or you talking,
no, so, go I'm on. Just here.
Go on.
Some companies, when they're, you know, they're pre-revenue, and it's always risky investing them, but then they see a real spike because they, you know, release some great results or whatever, and then yes, some growth might kick in, but the share price might not spike as, you know, might not continue to grow as strongly because it's already had a big rise on the. Kind of pre-revenue and the hype and the hope and all of that.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it's almost like the, you know, buy on rumor, sell on fact, isn't it? Because they have that spike, they have the early growth in the share price because of the promise of the growth. And then there is the actual growth that kicks in, you know, the reality, the fundamentals, and it's good. But, and it continues to grow in terms of share price, but not as strongly as it has done because it rose strongly on the hype. Does that make sense?
Well, here's the thing, it's a bit of revelation, right?
Right.
On, if you become a member, which we are, there's two sections. So what I do is I've got this stock scores. I do a weekly webinar, of course, and everything. By the way, if you want to join this, it's not open yet. Will be soon. Go to sharepickers.com/subscribe. But I got a watch list myself, so I add companies to a watch list. Now, all these companies on this list, they're all revenue generating, right? And I realised this for a long time. Pop and drop stocks are pre-revenue stocks. Are pretty much a false economy. Yeah, you can get lucky now and again with them. Right?
Yeah.
But all those rises I just mentioned, the 10 baggers plus, they've all got revenue and profits, and they are sustainable rises. So you may get lucky, and you can do actually, you know, every now and again you get a pop and drop, little pop, like a couple of 100%, but largely drop because they haven't got money. And they need to raise money. And if they're sensible, what they do is do an issue of equity when the share price is popping, you know? Now, if they're at the stage where they are going to go into commercialization, I've looked at, I'm reading a book, so I've done a lot of research on this. I've looked at so many companies that have promised so much. They've had the hype cycle, yep. and they've failed at the commercial level. What happens then is the share price comes all the way down. So I'm compiling a separate watch list of hope hype potential stocks because you can get a good... accelerate your kick out of them in the short term, but you should never hold on to them. You should only never believe the hope high potential, just use it to make money. That's all you need to do. So all these companies on this list are revenue generating. Most of them are profitable because I want sustainable rises over 3 to 5 years. I don't want a pop and drop, but I do cater for pop and drops. And I've got a pop and drop in my portfolio. I can't announce it yet because I give a month, you know, grace for members to research, but no, I think every sort of portfolio should have a hope high potential stock, but they are pop and drops. And in fact, do you see Bidstack this week when it's administration?
Yes, I did see that.
That's another example of a, you know, really sort of hope high potential stock that never lived up to anything, just burned lots of cash, and everything was the next big thing. That was a sort of, you know, and in fact, another company called Avacta, which is I saw so many people. When you get lots of fans of a stock, it's a red flag. You know, it means it's probably not good value anymore because the story is well known. Generally, the pop and drop slot, I mean, the whole pipe tour slots do well and not that well known, and they start sub 20 million. They're not 300 million or 200 million. They're like sub 20 million. So they get 10 bagged before they get, before many people know about them, you know? But yeah, no, so this list is not about, they are businesses. And that's a different thing. All those 10 baggers were proper businesses. None of them were like nonsense, just fuel on hope. They rose for many years. And so you only need one of those in your portfolio to transform it if you are averaging up properly on it and you leverage towards it. And it, you know, it can take up a big chunk of your portfolio, but you can put stop losses in there. But I mean, that's all you need is one of those. To find one of those, it'll transform your portfolio. Like I say, you do 1,000% on one stock. That's a cracking return. Yeah. You know, it's
if your current portfolio, like you say, you've got a pop and drop in there, or hopefully not a drop, but a pop, like, you know, a hope pipe stock in there. What percentage have you got that are these, this kind of new breed, if you like, of a, you know, a sustainable growth, you know, quality?
So most of the stocks I have, like I said, I've changed the bull market and bear market. I've changed. I used to have like about 80% loss making companies pre-revenue before in the bull market, because that's where it was, that's where the moves were. And the bull market isn't going to come back very quickly because the interest rates are not going to come down quickly. So you get liquidity getting better, I mean, over a prolonged period, I think. But now about 80% of the companies I own are sort of, you know, profitable or revenue generating. But I mean, I start off very small. I mean, literally, if it's a pop and drop stock, I'll put 1% in my total portfolio value. Because if it goes down and goes bust, it doesn't affect me. If it starts going up, starts rallying crazy, I can average up, it's fine. I'll go towards when the liquidity comes in, I'll average up and I go with it. But I mean, it's like, you know, it's like surfing, you know, go with the wave. But don't try and, you know, force a wave, it's not going to happen. The tide's not coming in, it's not coming in. So, you know, start very small. If you make a mistake, the mistake's small. But then I will have it. So, I mean, the biggest one I hold at the moment, I mean, is a Silver Bullet, because that's gone up quite a lot, and I average up on that. And the second one is another one? That's Beeks Financial, which has done very well. I've averaged up. No, Synectics as well has done very well. I've averaged up on that. But yes, it's basically, you know, it's like, I liken it to, like, you know, having a horse race, 10 horses in a race, right, Peter, and you've got your money there. And you're allowed to bet, not only, you know, at the start, but you're allowed to bet halfway through the race, whenever you want, actually, up until, you know, whenever you want. When you see, let's say you can back 6 horses out of a 10-horse race. So that's your portfolio, 6 horses. And then you realise that 3 of the horses are way ahead of the other pack. Where are you going to put your money? If you've got more money to put on.
Probably in one of those 3.
Yeah, exactly. So you can either take your money off the losers you've got, or if you've got some cash, spare cash, put some more money on the 3, you know, really leading the field. Because one of those are going to win. You know, some of them, 2 of them do well, but one of them's really going to do well. That's where you want to average up. That one can do, you know, literally a couple of 1,000% maybe. And they are. And that's the kind of thing. And I'm talking about years here. So,
but the ones that you know, like Silver Bullet, they're not, well, their revenue, I don't know, what is that growing?
Yeah, so Silver Bullet's like, it's like 78% last year. So it's going to do about, I think about, let me have a quick look here. In fact, let's go on stock scores. I just realised that. I don't realise I got this resource sometimes. And I go in there and I click into the my forecast here. So, yeah, 53% last year. It was like 40% last year. It's going to do another, I think, let me look, scroll down a forecast. So, yeah, it's an, it's gone from 3.8 million to 5.8. It's going to do about 40% for 2023, 8.3. Then it's got up to another 40%, 11 million. So it's really, it's now really powering away because it's got third-party cookie deprecation, which is, they've created this 4D AI platform for that. And, of course, Google have to deprecate cookies. Google's the biggest player in the room, so there's a massive end market there. So, yeah, they're powering away. They're still loss-making at the moment, though, but I see those as really, you know, a bit of a star there, I think. But if you look at something like Beeks, for example, or Synectics, right? Synectics is a very good company. There's literally surveillance with AI. It covers all the big casinos with the cameras, you know, high recognition cameras. They're also software as well. They supply software as a service. So they sell the hardware and the software. And some of their customers are like Saudi Aramco, biggest oil company in the world. Some of the biggest casinos in the world in Las Vegas and the Far East use them. So they are... City of London use them, lots of you know, local authorities use them, so that's a good company. They took a massive hit, they came down, they restructured the business and they started to take off. But good growth, good value, you know, Beeks as well.
When, I mean, looking at business, like you say, like the revenue growth can be there, but you know, how important is profit? Because that's
it is, but hopefully that will come. I mean, it's not going to happen on all of them, but if they do have, for example, I'll give you a very good example, like Silver Bullet, right? The costs have gone down by like several percent, and so in a double digit percentage, but the growth has gone up. Now that's a good sign because if your costs are going up by 20% and your revenues are only going up by 10%, doesn't count. Yeah. Doesn't count at all.
They're going
the other way. Their costs are coming down and the revenue is going up. So that's a good example of their product taking off with less marketing spend, with less development costs. That's a good example, you know. So things like that. But when you get access, literally within the next week, I'll be releasing this first edition to members. And you can have a look through it and see, all the stuff on there. And literally, just look at the top 10 and think, oh, I quite like that. Or, it just takes the hard work out of it, you know? I love it, Peter. I think it's genius.
Yeah, no, I can tell. No, it sounds good. It sounds interesting. I'm keen to look at it. So, yeah, that'd be cool. Okay, good.
Anything else you'd be looking at? Any other stocks? What's Paddy and Steve doing?
Like, I don't know. Steve was in Germany this week, apparently.
He went to Frankfurt, didn't he?
Yeah.
Frankfurter, with all his bags of equipment. And he made a good joke about, some... I said, where are you going, Steve? He said, Germany. He said, why? Sausages. That's a good joke.
Yes.
And you said, you said all his cases. You said, you put a lot of sausages in there, Steve.
Yeah.
And it turns out he's going to Frankfurt, which is named after a sausage.
That's it. Yep, that's him. So he's doing that. I don't know where Paddy is. He's disappeared, hasn't he?
Yes.
But it'd be nice to get the gang back together.
I know, exactly. Do you know what? Literally, we started this podcast. I think it was like, I had the diary popped up a while back. In February, it popped up. And it literally, I think, was like 6 or 7 years. 7 years ago, we started the podcast. And it's dropped off, like the beer market. You become less interested in doing it.
Well, I think we're more engaged and interested when it's a bull market, are we?
Well, exactly. That's an overall, it's a good indicator, isn't it, for how the market reacts. So people switch off, full stop.
Yeah, so actually the listeners can go, oh, it's Weekend Podcast, we must be entering a bull market.
Here we are. Yeah, that'll be the title. A Weekend Podcast must mean there's a bull market coming.
That's it. All right. Yeah, that's the indicator.
Yeah. You got a cough there, Pete? Right.
I have got a cough, yeah. I don't know. I never get ill, but I seem there's a lot of it going around at the moment, isn't there? But,
yes, there's a lot of it going around, yes.
I'm dodging it. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to dodge it. Yeah, trying to contain it.
Has it been, how do I say, has it been sort of romantically transmitted?
No, it hasn't.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, okay.
Romantically transmitted. Yeah, romantically transmitted disease.
Well, I want to be polite about it, yeah. Okay. Marvel stuff. What are you playing tomorrow, Pete? Who are you playing tomorrow in rugby?
Where? England, France.
Oh. Oof. Yeah. Yes.
And Ireland, Scotland before that. So if Scotland beat Ireland, England will have a chance of winning the championship.
Yeah. I think Ireland are going to be fierce tomorrow, though, aren't they? Both. Everyone is. Everyone's got things to play for tomorrow. It's like, it's the last game, whether it's a wooden spoon or the cup or the champions. No one wants to lose. So Scotland are going to see England turn over Ireland and say, oh, they are beatable. They are beatable. Yes. Come on, guys.
Exactly.
And Scotland lost against Italy, didn't they? Yeah. So they could be coming off a wounded animal. Ireland the same. They're not going to want to lose another one. And and England say, right, we're on top now. And England say, we're not on the bottom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It should be a cracking afternoon of rugby.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. An evening, yeah.
Marvellous. Nice. Cheers, Peter. Speak you next week. Maybe.
Cheers, Justin.
Bye-bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The contents of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.